in this world must engage their money in the service of the Lord. In this way they can continue in their opulent position without disturbances. This, of course, is a serious issue, that we know how Ravana was so eager, bent, fixed on trying to take Sita from Ram. And even today, throughout material history, throughout life in the material world, there's a huge, the big Ravanas, and there are the little Ravanas, those who are trying to become big Ravanas. Because we analyze how finance is used mostly, we see that it's against Dharma. And it's very hard, almost impossible, to embrace Sanatana Dharma when people are so much not even understanding what is basic Dharma. Because as we honor Dharma, then it sets a powerful, wonderful platform for becoming Sanatana Dharma. As we honor Dharma, it becomes like a launching pad. Prabhupada explains this in Bhagavad Gita. Also how the mode of goodness is a launching pad. Chaitanya Charitamrita, as well as in a walk in Hawaii, Prabhupada said that it's impossible. In one conversation he said it's like a joke almost, of trying to become a serious devotee, or we jump over Dharma, or we jump over the mode of goodness. If you think about it, most things that's disturbing in the process of devotional service, for us individually, as well as for our institution, has a lot to do with minimizing Dharma. Or if we look closer, we see that so much of even deviations and falls is all connected with the mode of ignorance and passion. So as devotees are clean and righteous and honest and have integrity, that these are not transcendental qualities, but they definitely support and they engender or produce transcendence. Otherwise it's like being on the ground floor and somehow trying to come to the top floor. You have to move through certain situations organically and naturally to be able to come and embrace according to the top level. And so it's an issue that one can become an embarrassment but not being able to have things in proper arrangement, be able to acquire the proper goal. So we have to be careful that as we understand definitely we are have this very high goal, we also have to embrace that and go, and come to that goal in the way that Krishna is inviting us. So he has invited us to come through the agency of Shastra, through the association, fellowship of sadhus, so sangha, sadhu sangha, sending people coming together to process truth, to live it, to become it. Experiencing in its highest level, connect with the absolute Simon Bonham, the absolute truth. So, if we consider how most people work, there's so much of people's lives, 8 hours, sometimes 10 hours a day. Most of our devotees now, their householders, and obviously they have to work, find ways to take care of family, take care of a house, take care of insurance, car, rent, mortgage, so many things, which is there. Majority of people in the secular world, they hate their jobs. And it's unfortunate because if people don't have some dedication to what they do, they will not give their best, whatever that may be. They will not be alert to see how they can serve better. They will not add the best what they can to whatever they're doing. In some cases, of course, people can be able to work. That's an expression, devotees. We can work as an expression connected with our devotional lifestyle. This is obviously the ultimate best. When our work itself can be a part of our preaching. Or our work itself is helping us in developing our Krishna consciousness, allowing us to do some service to humanity, allowing us to reinforce our identity as Vaishnavas, helping us to make some impact on society, to follow Dharma and to ultimately come to Sanatana Dharma. But so often, even devotee, our work goes against Dharma. Or it supports too much of a Kali Yuga society. And in some cases, what can one do? It's like in the proper Vedic situation, we see that Brahmanas would be highly appreciated. And by serving, by being the priest, and being the brains, and the guy giving guidance and facilitation, people would be so happy and so appreciative too. Give them some food, give them some Lakshmi, arrange living accommodations, do so many things. And this would also encourage and inspire the Brahmanas to be more authentic, to serve more, to give more, and to learn more, and to study more, and to guide others. Just like when someone appreciates you, you give them something, you feel happy, you know, you feel like even giving them something else because you see they appreciate it so much. Someone is encouraging some effort that you've done. Next time, even sometimes you have to do it better. You just a deity thing. The devotee said, oh wow, Pujari, you did such a nice gesture today. The deities look so wonderful. And Pujari feels even more enthused to try to do that service and to do it nice. Someone is clean, someone is cooked, feast. And the devotees are saying, oh boy, what a wonderful feast today. Feel even more inspired to do, and even try to do better next time. But the converse of that, of course, you really tried and somehow just wasn't appreciated. You feel, well, do it yourself next time. Hopefully we don't think that way, but someone is a little bit passionate with. Or one may feel totally disenchanted at his heart. But how do we keep it balanced? Because we do have some very high standards and we must constantly try to hold people to those standards and encourage people to come up to that and maintain that, etc. At the same time, we want to engage as many people as possible because we realize that service is our medicine. And through the service, we will become purified. This is this thing when you first became a devotee. You came to the temple, and if people, some devotees talked with you, and if some of them even gave you some service, you felt more part of what was going on. You felt noticed. You felt like, yeah, I'm a part of this whole scene. I'm relevant. I'm valued. People noticing me, and you feel I have something I can do, even if it's just asking you to wash the pots, clean, or do it. You feel, yes, I'm a part of this. But imagine if you came to the temple. Day after day, week after week, nobody talked with you, or nobody tried to engage in any service, or try to find out who you are, or whatever. Even if you were a little attached to the philosophy, unless one was quite serious, the average person would become devoted or go some other place. You know that Chatur Vihara Vajanke Imam Gyanas Kutinu Arjuna. You know the Chatur, there are four types of people come. And they come out of the searches for wealth and distress and curiosity, inquisitiveness, and some come out of knowledge. Those who come out of knowledge, they can usually weather the storm, whatever the environment or situation is, because the knowledge can often help them remain focused. But although knowledge factor is there, we see that knowledge is only one of the areas that people come. So many people come, they have certain piety, or otherwise they wouldn't come to Krishna consciousness. I mean, a lot of people are also looking for wealth and distress, but they don't come to Krishna. So those who come, even out of distress and wealth, searching and whatnot, I mean, they have some unusual adhikar that they're being able to say yes, yes to Krishna. Because most people have that same problem and they don't say yes. But still, those who come for wealth and distress, a major aspect in their consciousness that brings them to Krishna consciousness, they will have much more trouble if the social environment is not more reinforcing. And many will even leave at the same time. And even those who come out of knowledge, they still need to be constantly reconfirmed or appreciated. I was explaining in my leadership book, because the kind of preaching I do, many things are universal. It's universal that certain things are similar in all institutions, whether it's commercial, educational, political, or religious. There are many surveys showing why people leave, why people loop a situation, why they now transfer to another supplier, why this, why that, but why they make these changes from one to another. And millions of dollars are put into these kind of researches, because the marketing people want to know, how can I keep my customer? How can I make more money? How can I become number one in my area? How can I take Lakshmi from Ravana and try to own it myself? I mean, think of strategies and ways how to do it. And even some of them are being forced to be a little more dharmic, because when people do not feel valued, this is the real reason why that the majority of people will leave. Leave one restaurant to go to another, stop involving themselves in one supplier or another, leave one company and look for another job. Sometimes we think it's really the money factor only, but that's in the background. People will even take less salary. They even pay more for what they eat at a restaurant. They'll pay more for some commodity if they really feel, you know, that they're more valuable. So whenever people leave or whatever, or they bloop, or they go to another Gaudiya branch, or they do this, do that, they have their own reasons. They have their own maya in so many ways also. But people feel more valuable. Then why should they look for alternatives? You do have to keep trying to investigate to see how to encourage devotees as best as possible. While we do not avoid or jeopardize or minimize what, you know, our principles are, our standards are, we don't say, well, everybody come and do deity worship, even though you're not a proper Brahmin, or even though one is not timely or clean. No. We don't say, anybody come cook, anybody come do this, do that. We want to involve as many people, but also they have to be in a proper standard. Otherwise, we make, of course, save aparad, other types of aparads. I like very often to talk to the Gurukul children in our movement in all the different countries. Try to get a better understanding of what their understanding is, and why they are involved and why they're not so much involved in Krishna consciousness, even though they've taken birth to be involved, even though they're very special, that they are knowing about Krishna from the first day that they've come into this material world. And so some years back, I was talking to one of the devotees, quite senior amongst the Gurukulas. And in our long conversation, brought up a very basic point, very interesting. And he said that so many of our devotees, especially our Guru Kulis, could and would be more involved in Krishna consciousness, really embracing it as their culture, their life, rather than just kind of their religion that they're brought up in. If we gave more emphasis to Varna, otherwise he felt we give so much emphasis to ashram, and we don't prepare people for skills, for ability to be able to work in society where they can, you know, make a living. Because you think about it, at the end of the day, people have to live in a material world. And if they marry, which everybody will practically, they have to be able to have some way how they can take care of their family while remaining Krishna conscious. And if they don't have some means to do that, they have to spend so much of their life, so much of their time, doing things that even go against Dharma. Or they spend so much of their time being totally drained in an environment that has almost nothing to do, you know, with human and spiritual growth. It has almost nothing to do with, you know, with spiritual culture. And that distinctly does become draining for most devotees. You know, some devotees are finding ways of how to make money as they do devotional activities. Like in larger communities, it becomes easier because some devotees can have a profession or they can raise funds in servicing the Vaishnava community. We see this a lot, you know, in Russia, where it's, you know, hard to find jobs like in most many places. But many devotees, because there's so many devotees, there are some devotees who make a living off the supplying things or making some arrangements, you know, for the Vaishnava community. And then there are other people who, and this happens now with, you know, some of the, what do you call them, yuppies, some of the New Age people. Some of them are rather pious. And they come together in community, some kind of community, to create some type of business that is ethical, or that is people-friendly, or ecologically friendly, etc. And where several having the same goals in mind, they can do this while they make sizable money and at the same time work with people who they're sharing a similar kind of philosophy and vision with. And on top of that, being able to offer something to society. So this more and more should be our goal as we look at, you know, at community development. How we can create more and more arrangements so that everything we do is a part of our spiritual life. Just think how many devotees are frustrated because they have to struggle every day just to get a little something, just take care of an apartment, and to put gas in their car, and somehow to go on from day to day. So many hours that could be used for raising consciousness. Think of how many Brahmins in our movement have become, you know, like Vaishyas, because their whole energy just goes now into pursuing, you know, finance. And think of how many of those devotees have given chance just to be able to officiate, to be able to preach, to be able to help the community from their knowledge. Could offer a gift, you know, so much. So it is an interesting dilemma. So he was saying, if we gave more attention to how people can work, then some of these kids, why would they go? Because they would have a way to have a livelihood within the devotional community, And therefore, they would identify more with what is going on because it's practical and it's realistic for them. We do what? I mean, so many people, they sleep 6 or 8 hours. They work 8, sometimes even 10 hours. And so what do they have left? It's a few hours of the day. Day after day. After sleeping, after working, and there's a few hours to prepare to go back to work. A few hours to do a few things. You realize, and you work so hard, if you make a lot of money, then more than likely, you're just paying the government. That's so much tax. I'm always shocked, you know, see how much taxes the government takes out of people's salaries to use for all kinds of things. And so there we are trying to be spiritual and dharmic. We're working so hard sometimes in an agency or business that's going totally exploiting and cheating people. And then so much of the money we get is taken by the government that unfortunately in many cases uses to cheat and exploit people and create war, so many different things. But we are in a material world. We have to function. We know that whatever we do, it has some tendons of some unnaturalness to it, because we're in an unnatural state in the material body. As the devotees also have more appreciation for each other, because so much is possible and is available, then devotees can create this greater sense of community, greater support system, by being able to complement each other. We have several devotees all around the world, and even here in America, you know, who are multi-millionaires. But most of them don't really go out of their way, you know, to facilitate the preaching. Very few. Even the majority of them do not even hire other devotees. Which is unfortunate. Because you'll find that, you know, several spiritual societies would have a strong infrastructure. That those who become a little more established, those who are in such position, they feel an obligation and a duty to try to facilitate, you know, their society. As we identify with our work, it's also part of, you know, our devotional service. Then it becomes more natural for us to see how to expand that devotional service by seeing how to associate or engage using more sadhus. Now, of course, some of those who now have become quite successful, they feel like they came successful in spite of, you know, the institution, or in spite of support from other devotees, and then they feel the opposite. They were discouraged. Or Maya has captured them, because there are times when Maya allows us to become wealthy just to take us out of devotional service. There's some devotees, you know, it's an interesting phenomenon that goes on. There's some devotees who struggle so much, they're on welfare practically, or they're just going hand in hand trying to get something each day. And there's this other extreme of devotees who have become some wealthy and some, you know, almost wealthy. But in some cases, that wealth, that material success, has been their greatest failure. Because by that material success, it's caused them to put Krishna out of the picture. They're so involved now in trying to make more money, so involved in trying to manage what has come to them, that they don't realize that now they're not honoring Lakshmi in the proper way. And they're also adding to the ravanas who are trying to take Lakshmi away. And so Maya is so tricky. Maya can bewilder us by making us successful. And Maya can just bewilder us by keeping us so much destitute that we can't even chant with peace in the mind. Even when we try to read, we can't study, you know, carefully, because the mind is too distracted from the phone calls and emails from people we have debts to. So much in anxiety. What are we going to go the next week with all the finances, financial complexities in our life? So we see how we have to really be in the world, but not really be so a part of it. But we have to be the dharma. Now you can consider another aspect, that we have a whole contingent of devotees around the world who are lazy. There's so much into just thinking that we just chant Hare Krishna and be happy and that's it. They really accepted that philosophy too, ultimately. And so even when they have chance, opportunity to get a job, they won't take it. Or they have chance to do something with some commitment that can raise some funds for their family. And, you know, they don't want to do it. And it's not just spiritual because they don't want to be with the karmis. It's just that they're kind of trifling and they don't want to be committed to having to be regulated and just doing work. Now, I'm just bringing all these complications. Now you can see how that in some cases can happen, unfortunately, without one being so conscious of what is going on, even though a person will have good intention. For instance, go back to the Gurukula kids. Some of our kids are like misfits. Excuse the expression. And it's a whole lot of them like this. And hopefully that'll change. Misfits that they have no passion for being sadhikas and no passion for work. They have no passion to pursue profession, no passion to hold down a job, no passion really to be accountable in that way. I'd see them, they have no passion for chanting Hare Krishna, no passion for reading, no passion for having sangha with devotees, other than sometimes kirtans. And after the kirtan, some of them go smoke marijuana, but this is sex, etc. Now, we have been somewhat responsible for that as leaders. Because we've told some of these kids so much that material world is maya. They've imbibed that, and they're thinking, so why should I have a maya job? You know, they've imbibed that to such an extent. We told them so much what not to do, and they've internalized that, and now they're not understanding what can be done, you know, or what should be done. So they have this tremendous distaste for anything so connected with bureaucracy, orthodoxy, with material culture. But at the same time, they have not dived deep enough to be sadhikas, and so therefore they wind up associating together, often having illicit affairs, impregnating or having one or two babies. There's so many young girls in the movement who have one or two babies and no husbands. We have so many of Gurukula men now who have children and no job, you know, to take care of them. And this is, you know, this is against dharma. It creates an, you know, dysfunctional society. What to say of those children who are being brought up, you know, without the care of both of the parents, or being brought up and what? Even here a couple of years ago, I was talking to one of the Gurukulis, and I was mentioning about their brother and their stepmother, and it was so entangling, because it's like they've been married three times, father been married three times, mother twice, so they had half brother with this father, half brother with this stepfather, half sister with this mother. And I was like, oh! And they were all devotees. It's like unbelievable. Each father and mother and stepmother was still a devotee. And each of the half brothers, half sisters was still a devotee. And you think, hold a minute, what's going on here? In the material world, somebody said, well, you know, stepbrother here, I got two stepbrothers with this mother and stepsister here, half brother here. And he's like, what is your identity? You know. And so one unconsciously kind of gets reinforced with that this is not so bad. And the people are ready to walk out of their, you know, marital relationships. Sometimes it's very whimsical, you know, whimsical reasons. They leave these children, you know, hanging in such ways. So all of this also has to do with just appreciating basic dharma that then allows us to be, you know, proper Sanatana dharma. That this in-between is so much missing, and when it's more established, then we'll see how so many things become easier. It's the kind of reason I do a lot of the writing I do. It's all of, there's a lot to do with this, about how to bring it in between so that we're able to honor what Prabhupada has given us with more authenticness. Because we have the majority of our Gurukula students, who were students, you know, they're adults now, really do not buy in, you know, to our lifestyle. And this should be a constant reminder to us. When I came here, I was driven by one of my disciples, a young Indian devotee who was a Guru Kuli. And so he drove me from Gitanagari to Washington to catch the plane. So we'd be in the car for 3.5 hours. And he was remembering many years ago when he was in the Guru Kuli in Vrindavan, about 12 years ago. And I came to give some little class to some of the students. And I asked this question to the students, the whole, you know, wonderful contingent of boys. And I said, how many of you would like to be a sannyasi? None of them raised their hand. Not one. Here they were, these Pukka Brahmacharis, you know, being trained up, very rigid, very strict. You know, they're in Vrindavan, number one, you know, school, and these wonderful teachers, and I wanted them. And when I asked, they almost laughed. And I said, oh, unbelievable. And then I asked another question. How many of them were initiated or pursuing initiation from some of the teachers who were, you know, who were gurus, or those connected with education who were gurus? Almost none of them. Next day I gave a Bhagavatam class, and he was just reminding me about this. And I was kind of furious. Not about the kids, but about ourselves. Because I said that we know that, you know, it's not that majority of our boys should be thinking about, you know, a life of renunciation. But the fact that in our top school, we didn't have one student who was thinking like that. And I said, this means that we, in our order of sannyasis and leaders, have so much disappointed the kids, and they've heard so much and seen so much, that they've lost respect for the ashram. You know, kids naturally have heroes, and they identify, you know, with this sportsman, this musician, this one, that one. You know, it's natural. And in society, kids should have heroes based on what they want to be like, you know. And it has a lot to do with how they feel, what their profession entails, and what the benefits, or what the rewards, or what the duties and activities are, and excited by it. They want to be a part of that. And the fact that this was the heyday when we had Gurukul was at its maximum amount of boys who were, you know, who were attending. And of course, later so much of the child abuse and other things came out, and things shifted, and just so many things. People pulled their kids out. Some of the kids pulled out themselves, demanded parents take them out. So this was an interesting commentary, because it was a message that we as renunciates have to be more relevant, be more genuine, be more caring, and also reach out a little more for these young boys, so that they would feel, oh yes, I want to be like this person. and I want to strive in that way. But not only do they not want to be, but it's almost like a joke when I said it. You know, it's like some of them looking at each other and thought, what is he asking us? You know, to be one of those guys. And we look at the, you know, at the failure rate, and we see that over half of our, you know, renunciates have, you know, have left or have deviated. And so this obviously has, is unfortunate because we all influence each other within community. I remember many years ago, over 20-some years back when I was visiting communist country, when somebody, the communist country was still very strong in communism, how the worker and the soldier were like really idolized. Even sometimes, we'd be on the bus or the public area, and a soldier would come on the bus, people would like get up and get that person to see. You know, and it was like so much respect because that was a role model. But this is not a communist, you know, indoctrination and propaganda. But, and people were idolizing the soldier. It's like now, you know, in some of the fanatical environments where Islam is very, you know, fanatical, then people are literally getting trained and having and idolizing these suicide bombers. And so this is, you know, the idol. You know, you go to some of those fundamentalist schools and you ask, how many would like to be a suicide bomber? Raise your hand. Because this is the role model. What is put up and is honored, or we say what gets rewarded, and obviously people become more attracted in that way. So, and then the second part, of course, I look at ourselves as sannyasis and leaders, how we have to, you know, to be more relevant. And then to my surprise, this devotee, Ananta Veer, who was driving me, he said, Maharaj, you know, in those days, not even many sannyasis even came to our school. He remembered me coming and a few others. He said, not even many came. And I was surprised, and I thought, that also must have had an effect. That here in Vrindavan, many sannyasis were coming, at least for darshan, the deities, and parikram, and whatever. But how few were coming, you know, to be with the boys. So that became also, I guess, discouraging. Is that they feel then, you know, kind of neglected. And they have this, you know, amazing kind of network, you know, for japa. And also of knowing what is happening. Sometimes if you really want to know what's going on in ISKCON, you just bring a few of the kids together. They have a network. They have an international network as far beyond, you know, what we have together as presidents of temples or the GBCs. They often know far before us. We find out something, you know, they've already known about it. So I kind of feel we should incorporate the second generation. Guru Kulis, especially, we should incorporate them more to every aspect of the temple management, so running the movement. We'll give them training and we'll help them to feel valued, help them to be able to offer something. And in many cases, we'll save a lot of them from going out into, you know, sense gratification. Now, the other part of that, because the first part is that which is considered to be the highest spiritual position was not sought after, you know, by these boys. So that was a commentary that they were already not so much embracing the present culture and setup of devotional service that we have. Then the second thing, I warned the devotees when I gave this lecture, because it was a festival, and I warned them that this is unhealthy, because we know that Gurukula is so much designed student for austerity and trying to follow the orders of guru, etc., in a simple life. But almost none of them, maybe one, if I remember that, was interested in having gurus who were connected with the educational institution as their spiritual master, which would almost be the first thing you would expect, is that a child is trained, a child is cared for, the child wants to connect with that source of cure. So I felt that, okay, now, you know, sometimes when we're managers, it becomes hard. The management gets connected, gets influences the ability to be sadhus, and people just see us as managing, and that can be an issue. But even those who were not hands-on managing, but they were connected with the school, and they were, you know, giving diksha, that the boys did not respect them or appreciate them to the point that they wanted that person to be guiding them spiritually throughout their lives. And so, and of course, later we see that things began to unfold why these boys were not having the respect of feeling valued and sufficiently cared for, by these personalities. So, anyway, we're looking at Dharma and Lakshmi, and how Lakshmi has taken away so much from Ram, from Vishnu. And that when we do such, it's inauspicious. So what do we do? Well, a couple of things, very practical, is that we should not be afraid of work. We have a problem in countries like Australia, where so many devotees are on the dole, means they're on welfare. What do you think happens? Let me hear from you. What do you think are some of the things that happen when you have healthy devotees who are on welfare? What's some of the negative things? Watch TV often. Bad examples. No duty. Yeah. All of these things happen. When you have devotees who could work, but they go on welfare, because it's easy to get on welfare, then what to do with their time? They watch TV all day, or get into some other unfortunate things, that they lose the sense, of dedication. It's not like they're so active in their devotional service that they don't have time. That in many cases, then that same kind of mentality gets carried over in devotional service, and they expect somehow some handouts, or they expect others or the institution to do everything for them. And now in some countries you can be on welfare, and you can have two cars, a nice house, and facility, and you can live a pretty good life. Two countries like that. Two countries in Europe, that way also. Welfare, you can live pretty nice. And so it can discourage one to just honoring Dharma, being a person of integrity and character. Now the other side of that is that because some devotees, there's aversion toward some honest work, then unfortunately they go out and they do illegal things. Because they're so used to fast money that the idea of taking a job 6 hours, 8 hours at a job, making a normal salary, for them is like peanuts. And then, of course, by engaging in sinful life, sinful activities, the devotional creepers get disturbed. So even if we have a job that isn't so much of a conscience-raising job, but it's not sinful, we should actually do it with integrity. Because that becomes a form of preaching. Even if you're just working in an ordinary office or company or something, and if you do it with integrity, people can become interested in you and in Krishna consciousness because of how you do what you do. With ethics, with Muslim morality, how you're efficient. And so it should be, even if devotees, best if we can somehow create more and more ways financing, having finances that allows us to preach or help us to raise consciousness, very directly. And if we can't do that, at least we should have ways that we can be respected in what we do. Otherwise, again, what happens? People know that you are a devotee when they see that you're doing poor work, what do they think? They think, oh, because you're a vegetarian, because you are chanting this mantra all the time, because you associate with those cultist people, therefore you can't focus your mind at work. Huh? Therefore, all this stuff of your Krishna consciousness that causing you to not to be able to come up to the standard of what's expected. Then they blaspheme, movement of philosophy. They have some offenses moved toward you. And instead of helping, you've actually hurt them. If we can't help people, we surely should not be an aspect of harm. Keep in mind the Goswami, they were kind to all people. Wherever they went, whatever they did, it planted seeds and it gave people greater faith and surrendering. And help them to be better people. We don't have a position that we can make everybody a devotee overnight. Even when Krishna comes, we see some people, they still reject. But we do have a duty that whatever we do, it is somehow helping to raise consciousness. There's nothing more than the fact that we ourselves are not giving in to orthodox, stagnation. And people around us will be curious and respect us and whatnot. And sometimes they may make fun. They may see us as a little unusual. But then, what luxury can sometimes come to us, or what luxury we have, we'll find that we're able to do more things. See, sometimes people even have luxury, but they can't do as much as someone could who has better karma, who has less or has the same, but they're more conscientious in what they do. Because money is an issue, but money is still not a real issue in the sense that the more money you make, sometimes the more you spend. Or sometimes we have unhealthy karma. The more money we make, the more we have to give it away. It gets taken away. We know one of the signs of some inauspicious karma is litigation. And so sometimes we can even make money, but we make it in a healthy way. Then Krishna arranges to take it away. So many things are there. Anyway, let's see what questions that you have. Let's summarize what we discussed today. The verse is emphasizing about the dangers in trying to take Lakshmi away from Lord Ram. And how people who do that is very inauspicious. And of course a good reaction. That most of civilization is about that. Most of the way that people live and how they work, that they're denying supremacy of Krishna. And they want to enjoy Lakshmi without understanding who the real proprietor is. So many ways to make fast money goes against a healthy human and spiritual life. So important to understand the importance of motive goodness and Dharma, because it makes it natural for one to be able to do higher things. And when it's minimized, then it brings more fragmentation to society. And one of the ways that demons are influencing the world more is that they're trying to institute more things that destabilizes the family. You look at so many of the sinful currents that's happening. It assaults the family. And the family, mind you, is the microcosm of the institution of society and the world. So things that weaken the family unit, that causes husbands not to be proper husbands, wives not to be proper wives, children not to be proper children, the whole connection there with constitutes family. When these things get weakened, then Kali is dominant more and more. So we have to constantly revisit and see what our job is, what we do, how we live day to day. Is it something that is enhancing family life for those who are grihasthas? Is it something that's helping your family be more Krishna focused and Krishna centered? Or is it doing the opposite? And where it is helping, then we want to embrace more of that. And we're not, we want to back away. And then if we're not married and such, then we have, of course, we're all married to the, you know, to the ISKCON family. We look and see that our individual lives, is it something that is some offering in some way? Or is it really going against the, you know, the rods, the vows that we made? Are we avoiding jobs because, you know, because we're lazy? We don't want to be accountable? Or are we avoiding some work because it's unhealthy directly for maintaining the principles? Can we try to find more ways? Or we can be happier as we make money and more spiritually protected? And even if not, can we be able to have our job as an offering? Because if we do our job in a dharmic way, then that job also becomes an offering. It becomes an offering to Krishna, offering to our family, an offering to Guru. Then last we talked about, some points of Guru Kula, devotee made in both ways. One, the Guru Kula devotee mentioning how if we are able to give more attention to Varna, to how people can work and how they can provide while being in the material world, then we'll have more devotees who stay with us. And then my Gurukula disciple who was reminding me about his visit to Vrindavan. And it was his own class where I asked this question about how many of you would like to be a sannyasi. And they smirked. Of course, none of them pursued it. And even most of them, have gotten, caught up in the maya. So we know it has to do with their own free will, use of free will. It also has to do, in some areas, some lack of support from the society. I'm not bashing the society. I give my life, and I have the greatest respect for leaders in our movement, and for Dhamma presidents, and for sannyasis who dedicate ourselves. And it's very hard for sannyasis and leaders also, because leaders feel these days that you know they have the same problem. They feel constantly not appreciated. That's why we're going to see in the next year or two. Many of the GBC men, resign. There's a lot of us, we're older and retired, 20, 60 years, 30 years, of managing. The people are not into hands-on management anymore. But in some cases, they're feeling that after years and years, they feel, kind of unappreciated in such ways. So it's needed on all sides. The leaders need to see how to appreciate the devotees more and to connect more with how the individual devotees can be inspired, help maintain the projects. At the same time, the devotees need to support their leaders more as well, when the leaders are proper. And we all need to keep looking in terms of learning from the past, dealing with the present, but preparing for the future. So we'll talk about that, a little more this afternoon, about future. For devotees, needs and their duties and obligations also. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Any other comments? Anyone? Yes. Purusha, what does Janaka Pandit say about that? Yeah. Being a responsible person, we should be careful by getting into excessive debt. I mean, yes, we see that mature society is geared, but everybody, especially in America, everybody's, living off their credit cards. And, because things can be bought and easier. There's a tendency sometimes to get things that we really don't, need. And then we're locked in. I was on a conference the other day, And it was a GBC conference, and we have to, you know, declare our particular assets. Every year now, GBCs have to declare, you know, the assets, which is good. And so I sent in a little note, and I said, do you send me a paper or not? He said, I have no assets. I have no bank accounts. I have no car. I have no phone. I said, I don't have a cell phone. I said, I don't have a credit card. And I don't want one either. I don't want a credit card. I don't want a cell phone. So I don't even travel with a computer. I don't even touch one. Even though sometimes I get 200 emails a day. I have other devotees to do that, of course. But I was, and I said, that's why I'm happy. There's so much value, obviously, in having cell phones and so many things. But in some cases, you know, it's a necessity. But to be always wired up, like, unbelievable. You know, where the downtime? Where's the chance to think and reflect, and chance to have more, you know, personal relationships? Sometimes these instruments can just take us away. But at the same time, you know, I have so much. So many facilities, you know, GBC or Guru, everywhere I go, there's a house, a place to stay, money to drive, and this and that. So, one could say it's an easy life because I don't have to pay a mortgage. I don't have to pay. Because in Giranagari, this institute house that the devotees are trying to buy, but I don't have anything in my name. You know, there was a time I had an account, Urban Spiritual Development, which was facilitating books for Africa. And that went dry. And there was a sense of relief. Because sometimes if you don't have money, you have to worry about money. But now, this is an easier life. That's why I have the most greatest respect, even to the point I bother some sannyasis, I have the most greatest respect for householders. Even 2 years ago, I was very firm in a North American GBC meeting. I said, until we take the house of ashram is most important, we're going to keep having problems and we're going to keep disappointing our devotees. Some of you look at me like, what is he talking about? I says, yes, we may say this, the sannyas ashram is the most spiritual, but the grihastha ashram is the most important because most of our devotees will be grihasthas. And most of the things that constitute society is based on grihastha life. That if we put grihastha ashram as more important, then we naturally look more at the economic development. We look closer at education. We look closer at our children. We look closer at healthy families. We look closer at how we present ourselves to the world. So many things happen naturally when we give more attention to the fact that as community development, we need to give more focus on what is best for our grihasthas. And I remain firm, you know, on that. Because I feel that if you can be a grihastha and work and raise children and deal with all the financial issues, and be very strict in your devotional life, you're probably more than a sannyasi. Because you're able to do all of that and still be focused in your devotional life. I couldn't do it. I couldn't have 4 children, a wife, a job. That's what, you know. So I didn't go that in that direction. I know I couldn't do that. Have 4 or 5 kids. And some of our grandsons have 6 kids. And they're still dedicated in the service, and they go on. I mean, it's amazing. I think it's, you know, it's very noble. But either way you choose, it has its own complexities. It's like some of you see that you don't have a wife, you don't have a husband, and you feel lonely. You feel like, you know, why you, everyone else get a wife or husband and some little children who look just like them. And when will be the day when I have a little child who looks just like me? Huh? Where's my little girl who's going to look just like me, my little boy, from my creation, me, yes, my daughter, my son. And so both things are there. That there needs to be very strong respect on both sides. But you think about it though, renunciation is easier if we can accept that in Kali Yuga. I mean, I just finished, you know, 22 country world tour last year, 35 country world tour It's all over the place, you know. It's a couple of days, different country, different temple, different preaching, sometimes 5-6 engagements a day. And they're going, go to another place, another place. Well, that's a hard life also. That's why most of us sannyasis are quite sick. You know, we become gurus, we get even sicker. Because of the lifestyle and, of course, of the commitments. I was having, you know, taking several medicines the other day, which I kind of stopped, minimized some of them. And, you know, looking at my health, and I was thinking, well, it's not a whole lot I can do in some areas because the lifestyle is unhealthy. It's unhealthy. The body doesn't adjust. So much different air, water, germs, parasites. Unhealthy that every few days you are in an environment where there's radiation in the airplanes and there's so much, you know, toxicity. It's unhealthy that you're making shifts in altitudes, you know, in such a short, you know, time, go high, go low. Probably so what the traveling took 10 years off his life. But then the beauty is that by modern technology, how you can be so accessible. You know? A few days, like, you know, a couple of weeks, I go to Mexico and then to Australia and then to Hong Kong and Malaysia, India. So we can do that because of the technology. So it's similar in whatever ashram we are in. There are some beauties and some assets, some difficulties. But still, it should not take away from our pursuits of Dharma and Sanatana Dharma. Any other questions? Yeah, it's going on in some places. Just like in Potomac for a while, the communications department was trying to employ some of the kids. The Lacho and several different things they've tried to involve the children. England has some projects, you know, of this nature. And Germany, BBT, Switzerland, they were involving some of the children and training them up. And some have really prospered in that way. And those who have such a niche, they seemingly are much more Krishna conscious, because they have a service they can give, and they have some way to make money and whatnot. But in most cases, it's hard because we don't have that for adults. So because we don't have it for adults, it's hard. You know, it's very hard for the children, for us to have it for the children. Some of the kids have gone on and they've gotten professions and they've learned something. And in the future, many of them will probably be able to facilitate the society in different ways. Because after everything is said and done, our Gurukula kids are really amazing. You know, because I travel so much and I see them constantly in different parts of the world. And they're really amazing. They're so sharp, they're so intelligent. And they lead bhajan, just like the angelic. Some of them, you know, they know the philosophy, they can, you know, preach philosophy and like anything. And, you know, it's natural for them. But it's how they fit into the society that's the problem. A couple of years ago, I was in the Vrindavan, and it was in summertime, and there was a Gurukula reunion. And I just had the most amazing fun. Because it was warm and the window was open, and there was a mother and her daughter, and they were in, like, in an argument. But it was so intriguing, because the girl was using so much philosophy. Everything her mother said, she was defeating the mother. But she was rationalizing, she was using the philosophy, you know, to rationalize some type of sense gratification. And I was thinking, my God, we trained them so well. We just haven't given them enough support, enough fun within the society to be able to go on. You know, my mother's telling all these things, why should you do this, do that? And the girl was just using philosophy, letting the mother know why she should do, you know, what she wanted to do. And I was just holding my breath, not to laugh, so they wouldn't hear what I was doing. I was listening in the conversation. I thought, wow, this girl is really a preacher. So one can use, you know, one can rationalize all kinds of things. But again, if a person feels valued and if they have fun, especially when they're younger, they need adventure and they need fun. I mean, you think about it, even when we were very young, we were 9, 10 years old, 12, 14. Do we really want to be sitting and listening to a lecture for 2 hours? Not really. No matter who was giving the lecture. Some of you were, you know, Christian background. Remember when you were a young teenager or whatever. Or you're going to some food or something, and you're just kind of waiting. When are they going to end this? When is the priest going to stop? I was brought up in a Christian background. And I remember with some of my friends, we just got to sit in the back. And we had certain points that we would leave, go out in the yard and play around. We know when to come back before the service was over. We'd look at each other. We're going to go to the bathroom. Let me go in the back, go around and play ball, do this, do that for half an hour, 45 minutes. And then we know the organ start playing. Then the pastor's going to pass around the bucket for money. Now we better come back in because everybody's going to be looking at each other and they'll notice that we're gone. So we do have to also have more things that the children can do. That's devotional. That's not just causing them to feel that they're just being tolerated, you know. For those of you who have children, you know, you have to see how to more and more to provide so that they'll stay in devotional service. Doesn't matter how good you train your children, there's going to be a time in their life where they're going to be more influenced by peer pressure than by what the parents has given them. Even though you may train them very nicely, and they will want you to know because they respect you if the relationship is good. There are points in their life when they're going to be more influenced by peer pressure. So that means if some of those who they're associating with as peers are not also holding some of the same philosophy that you are holding and same lifestyle, there's going to be chances of trouble. But if you are trying to help them in a certain way, and other parents and others in the environment are also sharing something similar, and even the peer pressure will also be similar. But if the peer pressure is so different because so many of the adults have such a different lifestyle and how they're training their children, and they don't mind if their kid, you know, goes to parties and hangs out. They don't mind if their kid is sometimes smoking. They don't mind if their kid is doing this, doing that. Then your kid associating an adolescent is going to pick up some of these things. They just want to let you know about it because they respect you. But that's always an issue. And again, that's why, you know, the idea that it takes a village to raise a child, that is real. The child is raised by your guidance and instructions, but also by what's going on within the communities. Any other questions? Again, you can see how difficult it is. You're being a parent. So many things.
Mm-hmm.
Please. These are very healthy comments. Not in any way should one be timid about expressing such things. We can look at it in two ways. We can wait for the institution to arrange something on a big international scale. And there are different kinds of attempts, and most of them haven't fully, you know, developed. Like there's some places where devotees are trying to develop, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce. Chamber of Commerce. It's happened in England. There's also in England, the Pandava Senas, who are very interesting, because here we have young devotees, and in many cases are quite serious, but they're trying to keep a really healthy balance between their professions or their work or their school, you know, and their sadhana. And in many cases they will be able to help to create, you know, such a thing, because they'll have the contacts and the finance, as well as the grouping of devotees, and as well as giving the importance, you know, to the spirituality. See, it's hard for some of the older devotees, say like ourselves, because so many of the older devotees, they themselves joined at 19 or 20 years old. And they themselves do not have profession or do not have expertise in so many things that's often necessary to create systems and to create projects and to arrange for finance. So why? Because in pioneering, a lot of sacrifices happen. I gave an example when I was in Russia also. 2 years back, I was in St. Petersburg. And there was this amazing castle. Then also this awesome bridge. The devotees know I like history, so they took me to see this place. And it was bigger than a mall. It was like a city almost, like a little small city. Amazing, you know, the royalty sometimes would never come out almost. It gives you it's like similar to the modern day mall where you can just go in and go to all these places. And so at one point one devotee said, "Maharaj, you wouldn't believe the number of people who died in building this building, or the number of people who died before this bridge, you know, was constructed." So many of us who came in the early days when Prabhupada was on the planet, we made these sacrifices, and now we have such temples, and we have this, and we have farms, and we have so many things, that, you know, a lot of us died in the process, or we're wounded. And so a lot of now what really has to take the movement on is going to have to be the second generation, or those who have the material competence and the spiritual competence simultaneously. Now the reason I say this, you take an example like Chopati. It's one of our, you know, kind of nicest arrangements of a successful environment, where you have strong devotion, you have strong brahmacharis, you have strong householders, and you have, you know, lots of devotees who are having an impact, you know, in their community. But one thing people keep missing is that as important as the spirituality, just as important is the finance. And because that project has nice financial assistance, that when there's a vision, there's a goal, there's to do something, or even whether it's an individual person or family that's struggling, or whether it's a project that they want to do on a grand scale, there is finance for it to happen. And so therefore it encourages people to connect more, to stay but be more apart. And the Mormons have something similar, you see. And so these things, as Varna and Ashram, is just as important in both things. So now, in the majority of projects, one is missing. So most cases, almost all cases, finance. But even when that's there, then there's lack of the spiritual aspect. But both things, you know, are very important. And our devotees, like our Pandava Senas, or some of the younger devotees, who are being encouraged to find ways how they can maintain a family while they're being encouraged in the spiritual life, will be the ones who, if given the empowerment, are the ones who have more ability in order to be able to make a difference. Otherwise, it's good sentiment, but it just won't happen, because it takes sufficient vaishyas with sufficient noumenical understanding or knowledge or guidance. And what we have many cases, the vaishyas, we don't have sufficient, or we have, and not planning to it sufficiently, or we have brahmanas who have a lot of good ideas, but they don't have the money, you know, to back it up with the manpower in such ways. But then, so then what do? We still have to keep working to try to do the best, you know, that we can. And it happens by how we deal with each devotee in our projects. And it has to do with how we are looking at things on the bigger scale and the smaller scale. The smaller scale comes right down to the day-to-day management. But when people come to our temples, we shouldn't just somehow get them to think that you just work, and that's it. Because one day, that person is going to marry or something, and they're going to have some kind of guidance. We don't just have them come, and then we work them, sankirtan, or do work, or do service, or whatever, and then once they get blown out, then we just bring somebody else new. But we also encourage them that this is a part of your training now, as you're living in the ashram. But now what are you thinking in terms of 5-6 years from now? And if you marry, how are you going to take care of a wife? Or if you marry, you know, how are you going to, you know, take care of children? And as we give more attention to the individual family and devotee, that itself will ignite and create a more healthy society also. While we make more plans, you know, from the, you know, the higher structure as well. The North American leaders have been meeting a lot, trying to focus on some of these issues. But now this legal case has become so, you know, so absorbing that practically all the energy now is just going into just trying to save, you know, ISKCON, because, you know, we have threat of losing, you know, major projects. And so right now, unfortunately, much of the energy has gone kind of into a reactive mode. But in the process, leaders have come together and are beginning to think more really seriously about the future. And if Krishna allows us to go beyond this this legal problem, then there may be much more focus on creating a healthy society in this sense. So as we look, as we see how to approach the individual, while we still keep trying to see how, you know, to make major plans. Krishna Maharaj, for instance, he was also one of the leaders who was really seeing how we have, you know, to be more relevant. That we, and unfortunately Krishna took him, Prabhupada had some other service for him to do, so he took him away. He's with Prabhupada now, obviously. But he was also, would probably have been a major change agent. You know. And I'm creating, you know, my own, it's a silent revolution. It has its own effects in so many places in the world, of constantly addressing these sort of things so that it'll be more on our mind, and so people can also begin to look closer at what they can do individually, you know, or collectively in such ways of such. Because we do need to have a healthier infrastructure. We do need to have a healthier society. And so much of that does happen, you know, when we honor Dharma better. So much of that happens when we look at that Prabhupada gave us, said ISKCON is a society, a cultural society, you know, for re-spiritualizing the planet. So he said that we're supposed to do what we do so well, you know, that we can export it and market it, you know, to help the whole world. So I try to personally visit the Gurukul as much as I can. I have lots and lots of Gurukul disciples all around the world. It's one of my greatest joys in serving Prabhupada. So when I have a Gurukuli who becomes a disciple, who now has made a choice that they're going to accept Krishna consciousness, following the principles, and you know, trying to carry the culture on. But it's an awesome thing, because we have come into a situation where we were pioneers, and now so much infrastructure is there, and we have to now be able to expand it. Many people are grandparents. And so they have not only children, but they have grandchildren. And everybody needs, you know, certain finance to be able to, you know, to survive. And so, as some of the Vaishyas become more merciful and extend themselves and engage others, this will have a big effect. Because, you know, we have a lot of wonderful brahmanas. If they just had, I mean, like yourself, you know, you're an amazing brahmana. If you had, and devotees like you, had more ability to help to create the society in a practical way, it would happen. But at the end of the day, you still have to, you know, find ways to make money. Because you live simply, and you're quite advanced, so you're able to maintain. But most devotees would have to live as you do and do as you do, they become discouraged, you know. They would be in state of depression, not like anything. In other cases, they start taking shelter of just, you know, maybe having girlfriends and hanging out, you know. The Prabhupada did give us a pretty awesome task. You know, he told us to sing it, chant and be happy. Whatever you do, you don't have to just chant, you have to change your lifestyle, because we know you chant, you will change your lifestyle. You can't be happy. There's a lot of things that go along with that. But it's not impossible. Many things can happen, and we do have to see what we can do, you know, that can make a difference. And one of the things is that if there are, you know, more devotee businesses, more that can affect the social and economic scheme, then people will be a lot more comfortable in being able to honor the philosophy. And they'll be more happier about the movement that they've joined. Any last questions? So I didn't fully answer that, because it's complex. And that it deals with the day-to-day things that we all do, while we try to also devise, you know, grander plans. And some things is very difficult, because we're not in a Vedic time. The devotee, Dina, the devotee in Vrindavan who takes devotees on tours, Dina Bandhu, after many, many years being out of America, he came back a couple of years ago. He came to visit us in Washington. He was saying how it's almost impossible for somebody to be in the West and have a job and to be very Krishna conscious. Some devotees were saying to him about how it must be so difficult, you know, living in Vrindavan, so simple and whatnot. He was saying, no, he sees it's so difficult, you know, what we're doing in the West. That in Vrindavan he can just live off a little money because he's, you know, like Vanapras. Just seeing what people have to undergo and difficulties as they're trying to be devotees. So many things they have to, you know, be confronted with based on trying to survive. So Lord Chaitanya are fully aware of that. Prabhupada is fully aware. So he didn't give us something that is impossible. But he has given us something that can happen. And it can happen in a more secure way as we complement each other. When I went on this tour now, and I did like 20 or so different courses on about 17 different topics, most of my courses were on this, on sort of, you know, social structure, social development, and also trying to get devotees to engage in action plans. Any last questions? Anyone has? John. So, and I'll, yes. Mm-hmm. Please. Grahastas uplift us. As I said, that those who go on, in spite of the many difficulties that are real, and keep trying to say yes to Krishna, that is part of the strength that will make our movement successful. The austerity and dedication that goes on day to day all over the world, that these are cries to the Krishna. As we do this and chant our rounds with, you know, with sincerity and gravity, then really, and I'll end with this, if you think about it, the most powerful things that happen in our movement, they happen, you know, based on the Krishna variable, or they happen even in spite of ourselves, or they happen due to the fact that we have set the stage, and then Krishna brings a miracle. You know, if you look at most of our biggest projects, look at projects like here, you know, when the devotees first came to Detroit, in many temples, they just went out on Harinam, sold books, did a little preaching, because they were serious and they pioneered. Then Krishna opened up the door. They get somebody donate a van, somebody let them use the flat. Next thing we rent a place. Next thing we have a place. So we should also constantly remember that this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. And certain things are to happen and will happen. And the more that we can be used or just be available, that we don't interfere, then things will happen. We don't sit down and wait for them to happen, but we do our part. But the biggest achievements in Krishna consciousness happens because of some basic austerity, because of some basic purity, and Krishna brings the miracles in. The Shakti just begins to unfold. So many things that have come that are really powerful in our society have happened as some very special arrangement that Krishna arranged. Krishna touched someone's heart, and they gave this building, or they paid for this, or this happened, that happened. So we do have to remember that we are, like the sparrow who's going to drink up the ocean. And the focus and dedication was there. Because of the intensity of dedication, then Garuda came and facilitated. But we maintain very serious in what we do. Never neglecting the fact that any little service is important. We do that with dedication and purity. Then we have the Garuda factor come in. Krishna facilitates us in this one. ISKCON found the jaw, this divine grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sarvaki, A.C. Radha Kunja Bihari Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Goni Dhaiji.